From New York City, the world-famous Comedy Cellar presents Live from America Podcast. Live from America Podcast. With Noam Dorman and Hatem Gabber. Live from America Podcast. Where the top experts in the world and the best comics in the nation get together weekly to discuss today's issues as they cover news, culture, politics, comedy, and more with an equal part of knowledge and comedy. And now, here are your hosts, Hatem Gabber and Noam Dorman.
Hey, welcome to Live from America podcast. This is Hatem alongside me, Noam Dorman, the owner of the Comedy Cellar, and the father of three great future soccer players. Very excited about this news. They start playing soccer finally. Our friend comedian Karen Margolis is here. She's back again. Hi.
Hi, guys. Hello, hello.
Love to see you. And our guest of honor, she's already smiling. It's going to be a good one. Johanna Draconis. She is a PTSD trauma expert and therapist. She has an amazing story, and she suffered through decades of abuse and everywhere trauma, and then she decided to study it and then help other people. And she's here. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I usually sometimes text my friends like Karen before the show. I was like, hey, and she's like, hey, it's, I was like, we're gonna talk about PTSD, and she's like, I'm so excited. Like the topic is if we're gonna talk about dating or something is like, you know. So yeah, Karen. Excited about this one?
Yeah. Sure, why not? I mean, don't we all kind of have PTSD? I know, like, I know, like, maybe that's not true, but is PTSD, isn't PTSD like a matter of degree?
Definitely, and most simply put, PTSD is a response to a traumatic event, and that can be everything. Like, if you lost someone, you most likely had PTSD at least for a few months, and then you were back to normal, hopefully.
And that's the thing is, like, when I started looking at your website and all your work and you know, there's a difference between a PTSD and CPTSD, you know, which is, I guess, I'm going to pretend that I know what I'm talking about. But you know, it's, you know, a lot of people, that's one thing a lot of people say, like, about PTSD. But it's funny, when I was talking to Johanna before, you know, one of the things we were talking about, therapy abuse. I don't know, has anybody been in a therapy group or to therapists in general?
Sure.
Have you, Karen?
Sure. Yeah. I go to therapy currently.
Oh, okay. Norm, have you?
I did too.
I've been to couples therapy because my wife dragged me, but it didn't end well. So,
yeah. So that's the abuse of therapy. But a lot of times, you know, like
the last session we had, the therapist gave me a foot massage. And that, my wife freaked out.
That was one of the funniest stories I ever heard.
She's like, you're so tense.
Apology. I mean, I just want to say that's not standard protocol.
You know, she listen, sometimes standard protocol just doesn't do the job. She knew what I needed, and
did she?
But generally, when I had couples therapy, the therapist always took my side. So when it won't go anymore.
Anybody watch Ozark? That TV show Ozark?
I don't know.
So him and his wife go into, if somebody's not watching or want to watch, don't listen to the next 30 seconds. But him and his wife go to a therapy, and he goes to the therapist first and pay her $500, you know, to take his side. And then the wife figured out and started paying even more. So But seriously, like the abuse in therapy sometimes, or, you know, in support groups, it's too much, especially online ones. Don't you think, Joanna?
There are two sides of the story. One side, these groups outside can be enormously helpful to get a second opinion. Even if you are having therapeutic abuse and you talk to your group and you're like, hey, my therapist gave me a foot massage. Is that normal? And you get a feedback from other from other people who go therapy. But what often happens in self-therapy groups is a confirming of victimhood. Like, oh, yeah, it's so bad. Yeah, it's so bad. Yeah, we never get out. No, we never get out. And they just you know, and you never move forward, because if you would move forward, you would lose your group. And that's a problem.
I agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, I was in a part of a online support group, because, you know, sometimes you have something that's rare, so you need people from around the world with different experience or whatever. So anyway, so I was always just listening. I never it was in Facebook too. I never actually like participated. I said like, hey guys, it's my 10 year, or like, I feel this. And one time I was like, it's kind of funny. I was like, let me pour my heart out for one of those nights. And I did. And one guy said, man up. I cried and laughed at the same time. They did cure me.
That's something men often hear. The therapeutic abuse, especially for men, is sadly a thing, because they're like, you get man up, you don't have emotions. I'm like, they have a brain, so they have emotions. So, and also that it's a past, you know, the man up response, also something, you know, a few of my male family members got, and they came to me afterwards, and I was like, yeah, that's bullshit. Find a new one.
Yeah.
It's not. Mm-hmm. Men are not allowed to have emotions like sadness or female emotions. And it's like, dude, they are not machines. And it's sadly a stereotype, and something you sadly encounter a lot.
Yeah, it happens all the time, I guess. But, you know, so how do you know if it's, you know, I think also Karen touched a point, or is like a lot of people, anything they say, oh, I have a PTSD from this, you know, how do you like know the difference between like if it's just you being sad or in a bad mood, or dealing with situation and really have a PTSD, you know?
I think that is one of the biggest con. If you are having depressive feeling, you're just feeling sad, you're feeling down, you feel demotivated. Why true depression is a void inside of you. It's like a void that's slowly consuming you inside. And true PTSD is, I can't really do anything. Like food is becoming more tasteless. More and more joy is taking out of your life. And that is a sign you have most likely PTSD or something else that is doing you incredible harm. So that's something more to look out for, is do I stop going out? Do I stop doing my hobbies? Do I stop having fun playing games or whatever? Do I start neglecting myself? That are serious signs of something being very wrong, and not just, you know, a small phase. And it needs to last longer than, you know, you are like in a depressive mood like a day or two, but this state goes on and on and goes worse and worse over time. So if it keeps sticking around, it's wise to get help as soon as possible.
But so would you say it's like,
go ahead.
Oh, sorry, Hatem.
No,
it sounds like it's like more like bodily or like holistic. If someone has like, I'm wondering, I have a friend who has a childhood trauma and like intense PTSD from, and she described it as, I asked her what it feels like. She said it feels like an entire body experience. Like it's a total physical reaction to a memory or like a trigger. And I'm wondering if like, is that like what makes the diagnosis more like clinical? If it's like, you know, not just something that kind of passes or it's just mental, but it's like also takes root in the body.
No. This just means you have more outspoken symptoms, because that means your brain is actively engaging with the PTSD. Why, if you just slowly decline, I describe, is usually what you first have in the first stage, when the brain doesn't have enough room and space to count it, and just, you know, gives away more and more territory to this disease. And what you describe, yeah, but a trigger is basically reliving the moment. I mean, the smell, the wind, everything, you get everything, the whole package, you know, because you really want that.
Right.
Do we understand the neurological, the actual, you know, organic basis of PTSD? What I was thinking about this just by coincidence, like, you know, you have a memory, and it's a memory in the brain, it's chemical, and then you have some sort of traumatic memory which somehow supersedes everything else going on in the brain and becomes, and all roads lead back to that memory, as if it's like a hyper associated with everything and every. Do we understand that neurological process?
Not exactly. The brain is still a thing with a lot of secrets, but there's also the memory trauma and the body trauma. people suffer from PTSD from being abused as a baby. Like before the memory is formed, they couldn't have any memories. It's physically impossible. But the body keeps score and the mind keeps score. Two different things. But what you're talking about, imagine your trauma being like a box you in your room that you didn't clean up. And every time you clean around you, the box, around the box, and solely around the box, there's like this pile piling up more and more over time. And your brain doesn't like it. It keeps stumbling over it. It doesn't like it dirty. It has, every time a guest comes, it has to explain why there's a box. So the brain is trying to remove the box, but it hasn't figured out why it cannot lift it off the ground. So why everything needs back to, because it's an unresolved thing. And you cannot put it away. As soon as you can put it away, everything following up will disappear, most likely, because everything falls into place. Like you take the dust rake and everything is clean again. But until you do that, it just keeps piling up. And that's why everything that follows seems to be going back to it, because everything gets stuck at the box. And therefore, it becomes more and more disturbance over time.
But you have a very good point, actually. I never thought of it this way. It is a chemical in the brain. So can you actually get rid of that?
Not without severe brain damage. We form memories and connections in our brain, making a connection. And this unique pattern creates the memory. And it's not something where we can it's this one and we can whip it out, because there's a lot of other things connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
What's better is letting the brain has mechanism for it, basically. You need to make the box smaller and then it can be put away. And then it can be completely blocked by the brain and it will do no longer damage. It's basically put in a hazard box and be put away, and you can return to living your life. And
that's what you should do
in therapy.
Wait, I don't understand. When you say the box, maybe I'm just not understanding. You're implying that there's some sort of therapy where you get in touch with whatever the trauma was, and you talk it through, and then everything that stems from that is undermined and can dissolve. Correct?
Ideally, yes.
Yeah. So, but then you said, when you're a baby, you can't form memories.
Correct.
So, how would you? I mean, I would think that what happens is the stress of the trauma affects actual neurological development and probably have a permanent situation. But how would you have therapy to address the trauma of a baby who can't remember it, who has no memories?
That is extremely difficult, and it's a very good point. And that is one of the reasons we don't know really why it happens, but we know that it happens. Oh, I'm sorry. My latest information is that we don't know how it happens. I've been out of the loop a few months, so I don't know. But the thing is, it is incredibly hard, but that's also something rape victims have to deal with, and for physical abuse, they have to address both the body and the mind. So what you're doing is basically recognizing and acknowledging the feeling and trying to find the point that you're stuck at the most with the body. But it's so difficult. Like, it's like the worst form of patient you can have is a patient who doesn't have any recollection of what happened, because then it's a little bit like fishing in the dark. Like, you're going like, I think it's over there. Like, it's quite difficult. It takes very long. But it can be done, but it's definitely one of the more higher difficulty ones.
I cannot.
I'm reading on your website. Now. Hold on, I'm reading on your website about you. It says you were, I don't know what you mean by this, tortured, daily abused, yes. Age of 3 to 16. What kind of abuse did you suffer?
I was beaten daily, every day after dinner. I was also raped. Once, luckily, he found that boring, luckily. What he would do, he would use my body in a way to entertain him, meaning he would inflict me pain because he enjoyed my screams, or would do other things. Who was highly fucked up. I did see most 10 common types of torture, and I checked 7 out of 10. He would experiment, like, what need you do to bend how far to get what kind of pain reaction? And he did mock executions, where he would threaten to kill me, and last point won't do it. he would choke me. Where I was like almost like dead. I was like, he didn't care if I make it out alive or not.
Who is that person? Do you want to share that?
No, because that has implications. That's it was a family member, of course. So, okay. And that
where were your parents during this?
Not paying attention. And that's something like the myth of like, you need to, they were in the same house, but the first thing an abuser ensures that the victim cannot talk, be it but psychologically or not believed. So the most people think like you would know if something was happened, but you know, the first thing you do is silence the victim, then can speak. And the victim, imagine that. You are the victim. It's like in an action movie. You are taken hostage by the evil guy and you see your super agent friend. But the thing is, under the table is a gun held at you. So the opposite of you knows you want to signal the other person you are in danger. The other person has no clue. He sits just thinks you're sitting at a table in a cafe having a nice time. He doesn't know there's a gun under the table. So how do you communicate to your friend, I'm in danger, without the person, the abuser, exactly watching you? That you are not alerting him, but only the other person. And imagine one mistake and you're dead, because the next encounter, you won't survive. So you're playing abnormally high stakes. And usually what people is like, if you go have such extreme experiences, they go like, that can't be happening. This is a good neighborhood. This wouldn't be happening here. You must be wrong, because the likelihood that you're not accurate is more likely than this sort of happening in the happy little world they build up. And so my parents lost it when I told them. Like I told them when I was like, when it broke out, 25. Until then, I was also born into it. Since I was a baby, like I was also abused directly as a baby, but I never knew anything else. If you have asked me, and still ask me, I would say, it was a completely normal childhood. Then I tell people about what happened and people go like, holy shit. And it tells me that something might not have been normal. But if you ask me, I think your stories about your childhood are just weird. Like, this is completely abnormal to me. What we see as normal is what happens every day. And so what abuse often do is like the child, yes, that is normal. And if you come from a point of authority and trust, you can tell the child, yeah, it's normal to like touch specific things or doing specific things because, you know, we trust them.
I read the story, I know a lot about it. It's crazy for me when, you know, when I deal with something, I try to black it out, stay away with it, but you decide to study it and then help people. I mean, when you talk to people, you're a therapist and they have something like that, it doesn't trigger you like you're putting yourself in a position where, you know, I think it demands a lot of courage and it shows who you are, what kind of person you are, which is amazing. But, you know, because you want to help other people. And yeah, on one hand, you want somebody who's been there who can understand. But doesn't that trigger you when if somebody have even close story to yours?
I don't have triggers anymore. Like I cured myself. That's like the big point that I managed to do, which is an incredible feat, if I say so. But of course, like if they say, yeah, and then he came home and I'm like, oh, yeah, fuck. I know exactly what's like, and I deeply emphasize with them, and I can relate very well, and it does bring back uncomfortable feelings, but no, I don't usually have triggers anymore. That's why I'm in a position where I can help other people.
Yeah.
Saying that, so what is the like, what is the therapy like for this specific kind of like trauma, especially if you have PTSD, like, you know, overwhelming PTSD symptoms, like in your body? Do you know what I mean? Like, I know my friend who has really gone through, she's doing like some sort of trauma therapy, and mm-hmm. it's something that's so intense for her that afterwards she's like physically drained, like takes the rest of the day off.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what that is.
Yeah. And just to add to Karen's, me personally, I stopped having therapy because it just makes me feel worse. You know, it makes me exactly feel like Karen says, you know.
It shouldn't make you feel worse. But there's a lot of things you can do wrong with trauma therapy. There's a lot of misconceptions and a lot of people doing a lot of things wrong. Like one is this exposure therapy, like you reliving the moment again and again. And that just leads to you being so hurt that you get numb. It's like if you have like ever swollen side and you punch it so hard until it becomes completely numb. Like that's not how you should do it. Ideally, you want to have someone who's like, okay, let's go back to the why you're feeling like, where's the problem? Why are you feeling that way? Yeah, what happened was bad, but why are you feeling that way? The abuse of trust, the helplessness. We need to address that. And there's untangle the mess. Like, we take the helplessness out. You couldn't do anything. You were a child. You were, you know, whatever. If you could have done anything, you would have done so. And so you slowly make them accept, like, every little detail of the trauma. Like, one of the biggest first revelation I had was that the trauma and truth is like a huge ball out of mini balls. And you need to, if you want to get cured, you need to take one small ball out of a time, and everything, and the small gets smaller and smaller, and small gets smaller and smaller until it's resolved. So ideally you want a therapy who addresses like one small bit after a time, and you feel better. Like myself, my patients come in depressed and leave happy. You should have someone who addresses it and makes like, yeah, you're right. Okay, now I understand. And oh, I now know what to do. Thank you. Like, that is the stages my patients use.
But don't you think that people are different and they react to things differently? And, you know, because, yeah, some people couldn't, you know, want to remember. Some people don't want to remember. Some people do that. You know, like, each person, isn't it like there's no like one hard line? It's like, okay, this is how we do it.
People, it's more like in how you do it. Like, some people I can directly ask. And other people, I use examples, like a story, whatever, and they can, and their brain will pick out what they need. And the good news is you don't actually need to talk about what happened exactly. What is important to us, how you felt about it. So you don't need to be like, oh, he choked me. Like, I was scared for my life. I thought I would die, and I was joking. He was just laughing. He was laughing at my, like, these are emotions. And these are very strong emotions. And it is wise, like, depending on how your patient is, you either go straight for the kill, like directly for the trauma, or you start like dissecting the area around to give them more stability so you can then tackle to the core. Like, what is different from patient to patient is how fast we can process. Like, for some, I'm like, okay, reading chapter 4 until tomorrow. Yeah, I read chapter 4, 5, and 6. I'm like, oh, okay, let's skip ahead. And we can mix. For others, like, do more circle and circle and circle, and you progress slower. But, you know, you, as you said, everyone is different. Everyone has their speed. But on the base underlying method, that's what it basically should be like.
But it seems to me that a lot of times people want to be like, oh, you have to deal with it so you can move on. While some people, maybe like me, I personally, I just black things out. I don't even remember that it happened. Like, sometimes I'll be like, what? Oh, I didn't even know that until someone says something. So why do you...
I do that too.
Yeah, yeah. And I think a lot of people are like that. They don't want to even... They just block it out. They didn't even remember.
To be fair, I don't want to side that. That sounds very extreme, Hatem. I do that, I think, with some things and not others. Like, I have like actually like gone into like uncomfortable feelings and it totally sucks and then it goes away. But yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. There's whole chunks of my life I just don't remember.
I have a photograph memory, so I don't know that feeling. But that sometimes was helpful and unhelpful.
I bet.
But this blacking out part can be beneficial because sometimes it's just a, I don't want to deal with it now. And that's why, see, like, if you have a lot going on, saying, hey, not now, I put you away another time, that's fine. And sometimes you just need like time to process things, like mourning, for example. It's like, yeah, you will pick it up automatically again and again, and then you automatically dissect it slowly. And maybe it becomes irrelevant because your brain has some great mechanisms against trauma.
What are your brains? How's your brain automatically process trauma, and like what goes wrong in the incidence of PTSD, like neurologically?
Neurologically, it's basically too big of you eat food and that's normal. Like, if maybe a bigger chunk, but you can chew it. But the trauma is something like an orange, like you cannot eat it. You have to like take it apart and then you can eat it. But a lot of things just make, you know, if you're taking a bit too big of a bite, you know, you might chew on it for a while, but you can pause it. Your brain revisits things. Like, if something keeps popping up in your head, that's your brain revisiting this thing and taking maybe a part away or slowly taking it apart. And after a while, there's nothing left. And then you can disregard it.
How about social media? social media and PTSD. I mean, like a lot of times, I think social media in general, like help a lot of people getting more depressed and more stuff like that. Especially when you know that thing when Facebook is like, oh, you remember from 8 years ago. It's like, damn, I don't want to remember that. Thank a lot. Thanks a lot. But yeah, you know, and the COVID, I'm more worried about, you know, the new generation, the kids, the stuff like that going, like they were, they've been through the last couple of years, no school, you know, I don't know if you're a child expert, but in general, you know.
Also, kids are growing up with social media. Like, I didn't grow up with social media. That came when I graduated high school. And thank God, like, I social media is traumatizing as a fully grown adult.
Yeah.
Like, I wonder, actually, if there's PTSD associated specifically with growing up, like, kids, like, Gen Z people who grew up with, like, social media and stuff from an early age. Just crazy to me. How are you not traumatized? Like, are we all walking around traumatized from that?
Distorted. There's been so many studies about how social media is negatively affecting you. First off, by seeing other people having this perfect life, which are just fake, but especially young boys cannot fathom that. So they get body image, they get depression, they get everything. And trauma is usually more about one specific event, but it's severely damaging them and affecting their mental health. That's for sure. But I'm also very happy that it didn't happen when I was a child, because
me as well.
Because it really like bullying. You were home, were safe at home. Now you're not as safe at home anymore.
Right. How wild that it can just follow you everywhere. You can't get away from it. I mean, as an adult, also, like, I guess trauma is not quite the right word. Like, I am grown, you know, my feelings aren't getting constantly hurt by social media, but like, it's constantly triggering. That is true. It is constantly triggering.
It can be an abusive relationship, like similar. Imagine instead of a husband or partner who keeps constantly talking you down, it is social media.
Right.
And it's really hard to just, you know, get away from it. As well, the best method is not interacting, but you know, tell that to the kids who cannot interact with their friends on social media. That won't go over well.
Actually, no, I guess not. That's a good thing. The way you address it, like, it's like somebody, social media is like somebody talking you down the whole time. Like, look at you, loser. Look how people look. I mean, it doesn't really, but I guess I'm going out, so I don't really affect me. But what about the pandemic? Did you get busy after? Like, a lot of people have to live together.
My opinion are usually someone, people who have been difficult to trust. So they will spend a very long time listening to me before they even approach me, because they are very vulnerable and very sensitive position. But and so most of we treated. So the pandemic didn't affect them as much. But I'm also not someone who's responsible for helping first helpers and nurses in hospitals. Like, they're going through hell. Like, they have PTSD on PTSD at the moment. And I know that the therapists that work in those hospitals at the moment, they are in a bad state. Like, they're having a very bad time. And they have such an overload because patients who cannot probably mourn my sibling, family, someone who cares, dying. Then the doctor is thinking of all the deaths and the nurses too. And they're basically completely overrun at the moment. And if you have someone who does this job, please check out on them. They're really having a hard time and they can use any form of, you know, a pat on the back they can get.
Yeah, I check on Norm all the time. He runs a comedy club. but you know, I don't know. Norm, you've been, I mean, I think business, especially like when it's successful business, is also very stressful. I don't know how you deal with all this shit, to be honest.
Well, me? You know, I mean, I've been through periods. Lately, it hasn't been so bad. Actually, the pandemic wasn't that stressful, but because nothing I could do about it, so I just kind of like whatever. But I've been through periods which were terrible stress that I felt aged me and were bad for my health. Stress usually revolves around people not being able, you know, that kind of a helplessness, not being able to control situations, people not showing up to work or giving me a hard time. Usually, But what do you do? You know, you have to man up.
But sometimes you like when you have a lot of places, it's just like, you know, oh, something's gonna happen, something could happen. Like it's a daily stress. I mean, one of the very few things that I like Trump said before is like it was about, you know, being successful and dealing with stress. Like a lot of smart people, but they cannot deal with stress. Then you get a job and it's okay. But not everybody can own a business and run, especially in certain, you know, situation where it's, I would think more of a nightlife situation, like, you know, where alcohol is involved, you know, a lot of people, stuff like that. So stress in a daily basis, I mean, I guess it takes, you know, certain people, but, you know, but it also could have effect on you, no?
You know, virtually every episode, you say something about, you say something positive about Trump and try to pretend you never.
But, no, I just happened to show that yesterday, that little clip, but.
No, of course, listen, I mean, Trump, you know, Trump has a life experience and with some success, however he achieved it, you know.
So out of character, because what he said was like, listen, I know very smart people, but they can deal with stress. So they should work for somebody and do good. And that's good. That's okay. This is not him. This is not him talking. He doesn't talk like this. You know,
I thought this is a little aside, but it's sort of related. And then I'll get back to it. I thought it was very interesting when Trump did a little like a Zoom thing when he caught COVID. Do you remember that? And he did a thing.
Yes.
And that was about as most human as I think we'd ever going to see the man, because he was in fear for his life. He truly didn't know what was going to happen. He wasn't faking it, right? He's got COVID, and he handled it pretty well. You know,
yeah.
I was kind of like, oh, the guy is, you know, he's tough. So he does have that. That's probably just something he's born with. I don't want to credit him with any kind of working on it to get there, but he did handle it with a certain amount of toughness and grace. But anyway, getting back to my thing, I don't even remember what we were saying anymore, but it's stress is a killer. And, but I've been lucky that I'm not a drinker and I'm least likely.
If you say so.
No, I'm not. I'm least likely to drink. I'm least likely to drink when I'm in a bad mood or stressed. I'm more likely to drink in a party or trying to talk to a girl or, you know, like that kind of thing. But I don't drown sorrows in alcohol. So some people do. That's a nightmare. And I've also, I alluded to before, I've also found that when something was totally out of my control, as for instance, being shut down for COVID, I'm pretty good about just like, nothing I can do. Like, and I just don't think about it. It's when I have to figure something out and I know I can get it wrong or get it right. And that's very stressful. And then I'm depending on other unknowns or people who might let me down. Or this is tough stuff. I don't know how presidents do it. I mean, this is true.
Or when they have, I mean, they have a lot of people, but yeah.
I mean, the before and afters of presidents, like Joe Biden, I can't imagine that it was medically recommended for him to be the president.
Yeah.
It's horrible for you.
He looked like now he can do the movie, The Mummy Part 5.
Oh.
But
it's like traveling, you know, if you travel like, through space or whatever, like super fast at the speed of light and then came back to Earth, like you'd be the same age, but everybody else would be old.
Yeah.
He looks like he got fast forwarded.
Don't you find Joe Biden to be such a strange guy?
Yes.
I mean, these are the things. First of all, he's obviously in way over his head, right? He always has been. He's a guy of, I don't want to say he's stupid, but he's a guy of average intelligence at best.
Mm-hmm.
Manages to function and say the right thing and pretend that he's bright, you know. But the people around him, there's been so many people around him who've reported that, you know, including Obama, that he's not. And then he yaps on, and then but as he gets older now, he gets everything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain decency to him, But he's president of the fucking United States.
Yeah, he's like a scene darling. That's what it feels like. It feels like a scene darling, like someone who's well liked in the scene because they're so personable and they're so cool to be around with, but they just like aren't the best at it.
I mean, like if I was in a situation and Bill Clinton were around, I'd say, listen, Bill, you know, maybe you can give me some advice here. Here's the situation. Like, and I would think this probably, and Barack Obama, like these guys are not lightweights, right?
Right.
Even Trump as a business thing, maybe would have some insight. Like, what would Joe Biden be able to tell me about? Is there any reason to think this guy has any judgment about anything, right? He's got his finger on the button. I find him to be so weird. And then the sniffing hair. Like, we gave him a pass on the sniffing the little girl's hair, right?
I know.
Right. He's a million years old. It's like a grandpa move. Like,
oh, no.
To smell the youth. Yes, I really.
I don't know who you've been around, Karen.
I don't know. Yeah, I feel like the old, don't the old get a free pass to smell the youth? Is that not, do we not respect people anymore?
They get away with a lot.
Yeah.
He's 1,000 years old. He was the lesser evil. This is like, I mean, yeah. we don't have real choices here. We always have to choose who is less bad, we think, possibly.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't even know.
I'm really not comparing him to Trump. And I was trying to frame it in a way that wasn't comparing it. Well, not politically. He's a leader. This is a guy who just tripped upward his whole career.
Like, as someone who has also tripped upward my entire career, I feel literally attacked. that's what's happened to me. I'm like, people like literally straight up like me, and I'm kind of okay at what I do, but that's it.
there's an Inspector Clouseau quality to him, the Pink Panther, you know, like bungling, getting everything wrong, and finds himself as president.
I feel more like the Naked Gun guy.
Yeah, nothing negative. I'm not saying, like, I'm sure he's as nice as can be. Like, I'm not, it's just such an interesting guy, and I can't believe he's president. It's just so weird. Anyway.
It is so weird. He promised us that he was going to be like a one-term, like, fill in the blank, like gap filler president. And that is what he is being. He's delivering exactly on what he said.
Now, Johanna. Or Dr. Draconis, I don't know how Biden has had quite a bit of trauma in his life. His first wife was killed in a car accident, right?
Wasn't his whole family killed in a car accident?
Except for his wife and more. Then his son died prematurely.
The good son died prematurely. And then the shitty son is alive and well.
The son is immune to crack.
Yeah.
he also had brain aneurysms, right? And he almost died himself.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So you see,
he's been through a lot.
Yeah. So how do you think that affects a president? Does it make him cautious? What does it do?
I'm getting more at the idea of playing it held together by duct tape, but it's like people in the audience who are like too late to address anything, they just like try to drown out and just trying to paddle along the way. And we're seeing more and more cracks. And I mean, I'm relieved to hear that he just plans to do just one person's term, because I'm like a bit worried. I mean, he will be, most things will be done by his committee, like the people around him. Like, he's getting carried. Like, but he's in the stage where I'm like seeing more and more of things happening, like cracks. and I'm worried, and especially with, you know, hard times coming up. I hope he has people around him who support him strongly. And
listen to them, because he didn't listen to them in Afghanistan, apparently, based on the testimony. Apparently, he was very stubborn, and they warned him of these horrible things could happen.
Because he wanted to build his legacy versus what's important.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if you, if Trump came to visit you as a therapist, he will tell you, I have no problem. Everything is great. I'm so good. Do you have problems?
Yeah, it's a sort of line of patient where you like you have to convince him that it was his idea to come here. Hey, you came here to me. Why didn't you just tell me what's going on in your head? I mean, you wanna tell me like what kind of big values you're having, like, and you know, you try to like convince him to talk to you like that. But if a patient doesn't want to help, it's almost impossible. And
what do you think that Trump carries a lot of trauma around? Like maybe some people could just like, I feel like he just skips over it. I feel like he's someone who just refuses to feel trauma and then just plows on.
No, what I think what triggers him is different. You know, losing election triggers him, stuff like that triggers him. You know, people saying like you have small hands that triggers him. But other than that, a war or something.
I know, but a trigger is different from actual post-traumatic stress, an event that obviously I'm not qualified to say anything that I'm saying, but he doesn't seem like someone who carries trauma around in that way. He just doesn't. Like that's almost his political genius, was he was always able to just like deflect and like make up a cute nickname for someone that stuck. Like he doesn't seem traumatized.
What he has is what is his assumption is that he's a narcissist, and his Nisa, who is like a psychiatrist, said he has so many issues, I don't even know if anyone could ever identify them all. I think that's a valuable assessment. But people who have narcissism have such a slow self-confidence that everything offends them and they completely lash out, but don't really care about other people and other things around them. So it's hard to traumatize them because they're like, I don't care, like people want me suffering, it's not important to me.
But I think he did deal, like, first of all, he won. I don't think he was expecting to win. Then he was investigated for the first 2 years, every day, everything. And he still kind of dealt with it we're talking from a PTSD point of view. It's like he was fine. It doesn't look like it was traumatic, you know.
It wasn't traumatic for him, but he was seriously ego was hurt. And I just want to go back what Norm said. The best kind of attitude is what he described. It's like, what I cannot control, it's out of my hands, and it's best to let it go. That is really such a healthy and great mindset. I just wanted to say that.
Yeah. I always say, I tell myself that before I go talk to a girl.
I think that's something we're all very nervous about. But she doesn't care. Like he's just stomping around and not really caring. And he's not traumatized. No. But I think he definitely was having like from a father, like not like a very supportive and loving relationship. I mean, I think that's pretty known. I think that definitely had what I call trauma. That's something that doesn't really have strong symptoms, just slightly like a lack of self-confidence, you know, not really being vested in self. Like you can get your whole life without dealing with it, but your life quality improves significantly when you deal with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I guess, last thing is, unless somebody else have questions, Karen, you have to go. But how do we prepare ourselves for not to suffer from PTSD in general? Is there even a thing?
You can. There's factors that can limit first the size of the trauma and how strong you're perfective it. First is having a good mindset. If you're at your limits, completely stressed out, you're more likely to get PTSD, of course. Having a good social network, like friends, not the online thing, who you can regularly talk to, so you're in balance. And third is, taking care of yourself, like sleep, everything. Yeah, as much, the better you are personally, like have you know any baggage left or anything. If you have like a clean slate and a well balance, you will most likely walk from a traumatic event away without PTSD, while others get it. So the best you can do is, live a good life.
Oh, nice. All right. Well, your story is amazing. You want to tell us a little bit about your podcast and website so people can help and watch and listen and, fix themselves?
I have a podcast where I try to dissect everything around the PTSD, but also beside it into a small, sizable chunk so people can become as self-sufficient and self-reliant as possible, and which also protects them, from abuse, from therapists or whatever, because if you're well protected, and it's harder to to harm you. I also try to address issues where people are stuck on the PTSD journey to get cured, and give them information all they need. And if they have questions, they can send them to me, and I will address them in the podcast if I can.
Oh, excellent.
Brilliant. What's your website?
JohannaTakounis.com.
Okay. That makes so much sense.
Yeah, usually that's what people do. Karen, you want to share your information? And
reasonable. Yeah, sure. You can follow me.
The issues you have.
I don't think I have PTSD issues. I don't know. I mean, I have a really good therapist. I've been working through everything. I like process all my emotions and man up, I guess, as you should. I don't think that it's mutually exclusive. I think you can man up and go to therapy also and like kind of also just like be an adult and deal with your shit. Anyway, not to brag that I'm so mentally healthy. But you can follow me wherever you want. Karen Margolis. It's honestly really just Instagram. I hate the other platforms. I just hate them, you guys. Karen Margolis, KerenMargolis. Listen to Race Wars, listen to Two Black Guys with Good Credit, and come check out a show I perform every night in New York City.
All right, Joanna, you want to share your social media?
I don't have them because, I stay away from them. And
good for you.
That was a trick question.
Good for you. She understands trauma so well.
Part of it, but also what I'm supposed to send pictures on Instagram. Is this a screen next? I don't know. You can always reach me at contact me at johannatakounis.com, my website, and you can listen on my podcast, which is, I think, almost everywhere except for Pandora, I think, because I'm from Europe.
Weird.
Where from Europe you are?
What?
You're in Europe, you said?
Yes, I'm in Germany. So you cannot upload your podcast if you're from there because I don't know. But you can find me almost everywhere. Always happy to have feedback and new questions.
Well, thank you for being here. Norm, you have anything coming up you want to share? You want to share your feelings?
Just soccer.
All right. Soon we'll have the kids being. All right, guys. Thank you very much. And Joanna, great story. And, best of luck. And we'll see you around.
Thank you.
And comedy is great for PTSD, by the way. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Comedy.
Oh, yes, it is. Laughter is great. Laughter is wonderful.
Joanna, thank you so much. Margolis.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. This was awesome. Really interesting discussion. Yeah, it was really nice.